You're listening to episode 258 of Women Worldwide. How do you get past the self-doubt to reach your full potential? Can you imagine being limitless? What does this mean? And what are the steps to get you there? I've got a guest today who has a lot to share on this topic, so stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Thank you so much for showing up and for being dedicated every week. We feel your energy and it is so reciprocal. So we're sharing shows of amazing guests and they just keep getting better. And you're letting us know that they're helping you through the advice and you're moving forward with your challenges. And all of this means that we're changing lives and we're learning together. And that's the best part, because you never want to feel like you're alone. And we are here. So keep the feedback coming. Okay. I want to get to the topic. I'm really excited about this today because it is all about moving past self-doubt, right? That self-doubt that creeps up just when you think you're going to make progress and kind of stifles you. And it's learning to release the chains of burden. And these chains sometimes wrap around us and we don't even realize it. It could come from childhood, from society and perceptions of who you think you are. What would you say if I told you that you could be limitless? Does that get you excited? Because that has me really excited. And I have the perfect guest to talk about this. Joining me on the show is Laura Gassner Otting. And she has done amazing things in her career. But Laura is a speaker, an author, an entrepreneur, and a motivator. And she's the author of a book called Limitless. She's here to share her story, her journey, and her book and advice with you. Laura, it's so great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you, Deirdre. It is so great to be here with all your women worldwide.
I know, right? I think about this, how this started out as a little podcast experiment, and now we're this big network. And just as I said, we're learning together, and that feels really good. So, Laura, I introduced you as author and speaker and entrepreneur and motivator, but you know what? There's something that you call yourself. You are a chief catalyzing officer. So how does one become a chief catalyzing officer, and how does this fit into your world?
Well, how do you become it is you start your own business and you say, what on earth am I? And a friend of yours says, you know, you could be a chief executive officer. That's fine. But what you really do is you get people unstuck. You catalyze them. And what I've learned about myself is that I am capable of seeing, in fairly short order, the greatness in other people in a way that maybe they've never truly seen it before, or maybe they've never quite believed it. And I'm able to see it and reflect it back on them in ways that they can, for the first time in their lives, actually act upon it and do something amazing with it. And so I'm a catalyst. I tell my husband all the time that he's not allowed to let anybody cry at my funeral, because I would be standing there going like, come on, get on with it. Go do great things. So, you know, this is just who I am in my bones.
That's awesome. So this is a gift. Being able to meet somebody, to learn about them, and to find their gifts and to bring that out. Because I do believe a lot of really talented people walk around and just don't realize what they have inside. Now, of course, I did my homework on you and I went to your website and I was watching your video, and I really like that you describe yourself, or maybe others describe you as like this punch wrapped in a warm hug. So how does that work?
Well, you know, when I got on stage and I started speaking, I used to get asked all the time by event organizers, you know, well, what's your vibe on stage? And then finally, I got introduced by somebody at one event as she's a punch in the face wrapped in a warm hug. And I was like, yes, that's my brand.
That's beautiful.
That's perfect. I, before that, was saying I'm like a whole lot of like awkward moxie, but really, I'm a punch in the face wrapped in a warm hug, because the only way that we can break through and do the things we were put on this earth to do, whether it's building a huge business or nurturing a beautiful family or, you know, whatever the things are we care about, we can't do it unless somebody sort of knocks us out of stasis. Somebody knocks us out of this comfort zone that we live in so that we can get on the very bleeding edge of our incompetence and learn what we're really made of. And sometimes that takes a punch in the face. Sometimes it takes some hard truths. But it's also hard to hear those hard truths if they aren't coming with a little bit of a warm hug of a, I see you and I believe in you.
Is this kind of like the tough love that my mom used to talk about?
I mean, my mom's tough love was more punch in the face and less warm hug. You know, I come from a long line of Jewish women who don't say I love you that much. They just say things like, have you eaten yet? Are you going to wear that? Is he really good enough for you? Right?
So let's express
love a little bit of a different way. But I think it is very hard to believe in yourself and want to do big things if you don't actually believe in yourself. And sometimes if we don't believe in ourselves, we need other people around us to believe in us. So I think the warm hug is really important.
I think it's important too. And it just speaks to surrounding yourself with people. After you get the punch and the warm hug, you're going to continue on and need people around you to really continue to help you to grow.
And I call those people my framily.
Oh yeah, the framily.
So it's like the friends and the family that together are your framily. They're like your chosen family, the people who see you for who you are and who you can be. And they support you, but they don't let you settle for mediocrity either.
No, exactly. And I really want to get to your book because, you know, in the introduction talked about being this notion of limitless. Like when I close my eyes and I think about limitless, I get so excited. So can you just maybe give two or three takeaways that you wanted readers to get out of this book?
Okay, so you know those moments when you are at your very best, like when everything that you do well is being called upon to solve a problem at hand, and it's a problem you actually care about, and you're being rewarded for solving that problem in some way that's financially, karmically, emotionally meaningful to you. Those are the moments when you're truly limitless. And I, you know, spent 20 years interviewing leaders from all different sectors in a career of executive search. And what I saw was that I was talking to these people because they were super successful, right?
Sure.
That's a headhunter why I wanted to talk to them. But they weren't really all that happy, which is why as a headhunter, they wanted to talk to me. And what I found was that the people who were successful on paper, who also had happiness in their lives, were the ones who found this place of limitlessness, who found consonance, alignment, flow, who they are when they're at their very best, doing the things that they care about with skills that they enjoy using and being rewarded for it in ways that are meaningful to them.
That's awesome. So limitless doesn't have to be this big, huge, oh my gosh, I'm going to climb a mountain or move a mountain. It sounds like it can actually be smaller things that maybe we're not even realizing. Because you mentioned, you know, it sounds like there could be something limitless that you're rewarded for in your day. But if you don't give yourself enough credit for it, it's just a moment that passes by, and then you don't take that energy and move forward and do something else with it.
Yeah, so I think what happens is we all think we're supposed to find purpose, this like higher purpose, this lofty purpose, this calling in life. And we get it wrong because we think it has to be this big thing. We think we have to like go feed the lepers in India. And, you know, God forbid we're staying home to raise our kids. Does our work really matter? Right. Or if we're in a business that we work at because it allows us to buy the Maserati and a beach house, which is a thing that we want more on earth than anything else, then maybe we're selling out. Or, you know, we have all these ideas because everybody around us purpose shames us about what life should be and what we can be and what we can't be. And I think that at every age and at every life stage, our desire for calling is going to change. How we define calling is going to change. And, you know, I say to people all the time that if your calling is to cure cancer, that's awesome and you should go for it. But if your calling is working in a job that allows you to have financial flexibility and enables you and your family to be the first in a generation to not live in debt, and have actual choices, then that's awesome too. Like your calling and your purpose and what makes you limitless is your calling and your purpose and what makes you limitless. And Deidre, it doesn't have to be the same for you as it is for me. And for each one of us in our lives, it's going to change as well. And so we have to let ourselves off the hook a little bit and ignore all those other people that are telling us what kind of life we should live and figure out what kind of life we really want to live and live that life.
Yeah, you make a really good point. And I was going to ask you about how this changes, because where we are today, I mean, I feel like I was different a week ago. So many things change constantly. And that we probably need to recognize and just move with it. And that's the flow that you sort of speak to. Why would somebody not be able to, like, what holds somebody back from actually having this aha moment almost?
So it's usually the expectations of other people in our lives. So at some point in your life, you were probably told something like, for me, it was, you know, you're a pretty argumentative young lady, Miss Fourth Grader, you should maybe become a lawyer. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I think you're wrong, because, you know, I was argumentative. But I still put together a path that got me to law school, where on the very first day I looked around and I went, I don't really want to be here. This isn't really right. And so I dropped out and I joined a presidential campaign. And on that presidential campaign, I joke around that I met and I began to date the man of my mother's dreams. Except the man of my mother's dreams, while on paper was perfect, didn't give me butterflies in my stomach.
No, and so wasn't your dream.
Wasn't the man of my dreams. And concentrate as I might, I couldn't make it happen. And, you know, all throughout our life, we've been handed these ideas of what success should look like. Go to the right school, get the right job, wear the right clothes and exactly the right size, put your kids in the right, you know, music classes, whatever all those things are. Don't be too, you know, female, don't be too male, right? In the workplace, like all these ideas that other people put on us. And we have these scorecards and we're walking around with them and we don't even realize we have them. But this constant pressure to fulfill everyone else's idea of what success should be is eroding our happiness. So, you know, I tell people all the time that what we really need to do is we need to say, screw the Joneses, you know, those friends with their perfect Facebook photos and their perfect, you know, sunsets and the kids being thrown up in the sky exactly the right time to time it, like grabbing the sunshine. You know them.
I can picture
those friends. We all have those friends. And we feel this overwhelming burden and guilt and shame if we're not doing the same thing. And I just want us to start to fail at living into everybody else's expectation and everyone else's definition of success and decide for ourselves what success would feel like.
Right. Oh, I love that. Fail at other people's expectations.
Right. Because when we fail at living up to everyone else's expectation, what miraculously happens is suddenly we have all this space for our own.
That's a beautiful thing. And we need that space. Laura, I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts just for a second. We're going to shift our focus over to a project that I've been working on. It is ongoing research. It's my millennial passion project. I've developed a model called FEEL, Face Your Fears, Engage with Empathy, Use Ethics and Good Judgment, and Unleash the Love. And I want to talk about the first E in FEEL, which is empathy and emotional intelligence, because this is something that millennials were really crying out about in my research. So I'm going to ask you, Laura, how are you incorporating empathy and emotional intelligence into what you do every day?
Oh, it's such a good question. So when I speak, I get up in front of thousands of people and I will take volunteers from the audience and I'll hand them the microphone on stage and I'll do live on stage coaching. And I do that because for me, that engages me. It gets me excited. I'm not giving the rote keynote. I'm not doing the script. And so I'll give them 60 seconds. They'll tell me their problem and then we'll work on it and solve it together. And the first few times I did this, the solution to me was clear, like what they should do was clear. So I immediately just jumped right into the solution. And you could see them kind of step back and feel a little overwhelmed and not so sure. And the audience, people who were lined up to get on stage kind of step back because they didn't want to feel stupid, right? It's like, oh, the answer is so obvious. And then one day I realized, oh, wait, my brain may be working faster because I've seen the problem before. And I have that amazing thing that makes you seem so brilliant, which is just a little inch of perspective, right? Like I'm not in the problem, it's not intimate and detailed for me. So now when I do it, I say, oh, I feel that. I see, I can tell that that is so real for you. And I can feel the pain that you feel on it. Can we have a minute and just give Claudia a round of applause just for her courage to come up here and support her in what she's going through? Give me a hug. And I spend a minute really just seeing her. And it's not a fake thing. It's actually giving me that moment to look at them and see them and really understand them and give them a hug and be engaged so that then when I start asking them these catalyzing questions, I'm not just, boom, here's the answer, bulldozer, but I'm actually helping them find where they want to go in this way that's supportive. And it took me a while to understand why my punch in the face strategy wasn't working and why I needed the warm hug, literally and metaphorically first in order to make it happen. So that's how I work to add empathy into the speaking and the online coaching, on stage coaching that I do.
Well, you gave me chills and I love that you said feel. It's that awesome. And I think that probably made a big difference for all of those people who come up for the on stage coaching. So thank you. Thank you for your answer and for all of you and for Laura and anybody who wants to take a test to see how much you feel to be scored and then assess like where you need a little work in certain areas. You can go to feelfirsttest.com. It's a test that my team and I have built. It will recommend exercises so you can increase your level of feel. Okay, Laura, let's jump back into our discussion. Now, we were talking about consonants and this kind of notion of failing at other people's expectations. Was there ever a time that there was a really big aha moment for you? Now, I know you mentioned sitting in the law school class. Any other points along the way in your career where something just kind of punched you in the face and then you needed a warm hug?
Yeah. I mean, there was the time that I was with the big, you know, fancy firm and I realized that it wasn't working for me and I left and I started my own thing. But I think I wanted to, but I think that's a story you probably hear a lot. So I think I'm going to tell a different story, which was the moment 10 years in to running that firm when I realized it wasn't consonant with who I was anymore. And I needed to leave. I needed to figure out an exit strategy for this company that I built that I could probably have run in my sleep for the next 20 years and never really, you know, worked that hard about. But I founded a firm, an executive search firm, that did work differently than the way the rest of the sector had done it. And when we started the firm, it really needed this sort of moxie-filled, brash, you know, in your face, a bit iconoclastic and like an approach about like, here's the way the whole nonprofit sector should get services in this way. They deserve better. It has to be this way. And after about 10 years of growing the firm 100% every year, we'd spawned a lot of competition. So that's how I knew we were doing good work. I realized that the sector had figured it out and they were asking for us. So it didn't really need my kind of leadership anymore. And what the firm really needed was somebody who was super geeked out about the quality and the day-to-day work that we were doing. And that really wasn't me. And so I turned to my business partner and I said, you know, this isn't filling my soul anymore. I'm not learning new things. I'm not growing. I want to, as a CEO, my job is to be 18 to 24 months ahead of the market. if I'm doing, you know, figuring out solutions to problems the market doesn't even know it has, and my people need to be focused on today, this week, right now, actually delivering those solutions.
Sure.
And the better I got at my work and the better they got at their work, the further apart we were. And I loved being out in this space, but trying to drag them into my space was exhausting for them. And for me to live in their space was, it wasn't interesting to me. And it didn't bring out my very best, the place where I was limitless. So I had to make that really difficult decision that A, this wasn't right for me. And also B, I have no idea what is, and I don't really know what I'm going to do next. So there was that moment of absolute utter terror where I didn't know what was going to come, but I knew that I knew what I liked. I knew what I enjoyed. I knew what I was drawn to. And so I went on this entire journey where I was like, okay, we've got through the sale. And I think maybe I'll go into venture capital, right? Because I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've created a lot of things. Everything I've ever created still exists. I'm really proud of the fact that I built institutions and not cathedrals. And also I've spent 20 years interviewing people and sizing them up. So like, I could probably figure out whether or not someone's going to be able to build a business or not, right? Sure. And so I interviewed with all these venture capitalists and I got great offers for, you know, immediately vesting partnerships and all this stuff. And then I was like, I love venture capital, but I don't like venture capitalists. I don't even want to work with any of these guys. And they were mostly all
That's
guys.
That's a huge aha moment.
It was a huge aha moment. And so I really had to, and this is 4.5 years ago, I had to go through this entire question of who am I when I'm no longer LGO, CEO, here's my business card, and really figure out who I am. And the funniest part about that is that throughout this journey, I actually got asked to do a TEDx talk. And my immediate response was, no way, no how, I don't want to speak. I hate speaking, terrifies me, I have no interest. And my then 14-year-old, who's now 17, turned to me and was like, Mom, don't you always tell me I have to do hard things? And it doesn't challenge me, it doesn't change me. And don't you always tell me life starts on the other side of the fear? So 6 weeks later, I'm on the stage. I give this TEDx. It gets some attention. That attention gets me offers to speak. Those offers to speak come in places where all the other people on the stage have books. And I'm like, I should probably get me one of them so I can seem legit. And so I write Limitless. And so this whole, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. Uh-oh, I'm stuck. What's next? I have no idea. Actually ended up in a completely unexpected, non-strategic, and such an enjoyable career transition.
Oh my gosh, that is an amazing story. So it seems like it's a continuing revolution in the sense that, and evolution, because one limitless thing that happens in your life leads to so much more if you let it, if you find this consonance.
Yeah, I mean, hell yeah, right? We're women and we have multitudes within us, right? Women, we have so much nuance and so much ability and so much growth and evolution and revolution. We have all these natural on-ramps and off-ramps in life. You know, we have, if you choose to have children, right, you have children, then your children go to school, and then your children, you know, then they're teenagers, and maybe you want to spend a little more time with them, but then they go off to college, and you're an empty nester, and right, if you have a spouse or a partner, and they may retire, and what happens? And we have all these, you know, say what you will about societal expectations, but those societal expectations also give us opportunities to constantly be saying, well, what am I doing now? What's important to me now? Am I in consonance with who I really want to be at this age and at this life stage? But me, who dropped out of law school and joined that presidential campaign, was more than happy to sleep on a campaign bus and eat cold pizza and be paid in, you know, ramen soup and idealism. The me now likes to travel first class and stay in really fancy hotels with 800 thread count sheets. I'm a princess. Both of us wanted to change the world and are doing work on behalf of nonprofits and politics and our communities. But we're very different humans now. And if I set in stone my definition of success as that 22-year-old back then, well, the almost 49-year-old me would be really miserable right now.
You make so many great points. I can't even believe that we're up to the advice question and close to the end. Can you share, Laura, just your best advice, whether it comes from your book or your life's work or experience? What can you tell women worldwide listeners about becoming limitless?
So I want to tackle, there's so many points in my book, Limitless, but I want to tackle the one that I hear so many women talking about, which is, I'm so tired. I'm so exhausted. I'm so busy. What I will say is, I don't actually think that the exhaustion comes from the busy. I think the exhaustion comes from the costume changes that we go through between all the busy, the who we are as parents, the who we are as spouses, the who we are as workers, the who we are, you know, as just ourselves individually. And I think that if we figure out how to marry the who we are with the what we do, whether it's paid work, unpaid work, in your community, in your house, in your corporation, wherever it is, if we can figure out who we really are and what really matters to us, what our calling is, how that work connects, you know, the work that we do connects to that, how it contributes to our life and who we want to be as people, and how much control we want to have over each of these pieces, then we're able to figure out what's consonant to us, who we are today, and then we can actually decide what matters to us. We can say yes to the things that really matter, which, by the way, makes it a lot easier to say no to the stuff that doesn't. And I have lots of blog posts that I've written about these things on my site as well, and we can link to that. But let's stop being so busy and living in this martyrdom of busyness and start thinking, who do I really want to be? And how do I make myself busy with that?
I agree, and your advice is excellent. Last question, Laura, super easy. Where can people find out more about you, your book, and your work?
So my name is Laura Gassner Otting. All my good friends call me LGO. So on all the socials, I'm at Hey, LGO, HEYLGO. The book Limitless, How to Ignore Everybody, Carve Your Own Path, and Live Your Best Life is available on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, really anywhere fine books are sold. And if you are a shopper at your local independent bookstore, which I hope you are, you can go and ask them to order if they don't already have it.
Awesome. Laura, thank you so much for coming on the show, for sharing your journey, all about how we can find consonance and be limitless. You've shared such great advice. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me, Deidre.
Oh, such a pleasure. And thank you to all of you for tuning into Women Worldwide. And please keep sharing with us. You can tweet me. I'm at Dee Breckenridge. Go to the YouTube channel. It's the Deidre Breckenridge channel. Subscribe, comment there. You can sign up for updates on the Women Worldwide Show site. So that's womenworldwideshow.com. Okay, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.